Good evening. Thanks everyone for coming. So sort of as a continuation of last week's topic, which I hadn't planned in advance to continue on, but last week's topic opened up some discussions about the general issues, the crisis, challenges pertaining to, in particular, to agunos, to women who would like to remarry, who have been in a relationship that has ended in all practical purposes, but are unable to remarry. And the question was, well, we see that there are cases in which halacha has been decided in ways that make it easier for people to remarry or to avoid certain personal status issues. And we could ask, well, what about what we call the aguna crisis? Is there anything that could be done? There have been a lot of proposals and ideas, much of which have been accepted, many which have not. And, what have the halakhic authorities in the last 100 years, how have they addressed this? What types of solutions have been accepted, and really focus tonight on what type of solution by and large has not been accepted. And it's kind of the other side of the coin. Last week we discussed marriages that were, again, not annulled, not canceled, but that were deemed to have never taken place. As we noted last week, I didn't put on here, but the first mission in Kedushin says that a marriage only ends either through the giving of a get or through the death of the husband. Those are once a Jewish marriage occurs, those are the only ways that the marriage can end. So we discussed last week about cases where, at least according to Moshe Feinstein, many marriages never really took place halachically, which in practice has really obviated a lot of issues of mamzerus and status issues. But okay, those marriages didn't take hold because there was something missing in the process. Either the witnesses were invalid, or there wasn't an actual kedushin process at all. It was something else. So that's why, in many cases, we could say that the marriage never took place. But when we're talking about the situation of an aguna, so those situations, we assume that the marriage did take place. You had an Orthodox wedding, a halachic wedding, and now and the marriage has ended, and the husband is unwilling to give a get. So is there anything we could say about those marriages? Can we say that maybe they're invalid? Maybe there was some information that had we known, we wouldn't have gone ahead with the marriage. So this is really a question that was discussed in particular in the 70s. But even after that, even more recently, there have been different advocates for agunos, and again, correctly so, that have lobbied for these types of ideas. Can we invalidate a marriage? Can we say that there was something missing there? And I just want to say from the outset that, this is very a difficult issue, because it's a very, unfortunately, a real issue, an issue that that causes pain to too many, probably small percentage when women are unfortunately in this situation, it causes a tremendous amount of pain and hardship, and really, as the word suggests, really chains them from being able to, remarry and move on with life. I was thinking about it, and sometimes when we learn Torah, we discuss these issues. Sometimes we may look at it from either just the Torah perspective or from the real life emotional perspective. And, sometimes we learn, when we're in the base measure, sometimes we learn these topics that, Gittin, is one of one of the yeshiva shema sectors. One of the tractates that's learned the yeshiva, it has a lot of concepts in it, but you don't think for a second, this is kind of a sad situation. that someone's delivering a get, so the marriage has ended. It's kind of a sad situation. And sometimes we can focus on the technical details and the analysis without necessarily, you know, just thinking about, well, how does this look in real life? And then on the other side, you have when we're involved in these situations or hearing about these situations in real life. So we think how, you know, how terrible it is, how sad it is. And, you know, sometimes we may forget, well, what does the Torah have to say? How can we address it within the confines of Torah? What may be outside the confines of Torah? So I just want to discuss one of the ways that the Aguna crisis has at least been tried to be, have been dealt with, and what maybe are some of the challenges there. So we said that last time we discussed marriages that never took place. Okay, because they weren't really performed in accordance with halacha. But what about marriages that did take place? So what happens if you get married and then you find out something about your spouse that you totally didn't know about? So what effect, if any, would that have on the marriage?
Sometimes invalidate.
So what might invalidate? Let's say, you marry someone and they shower once a year.
Right,
that's not invalidate. If he's gay, invalidate. So you think that there's some sort of, perhaps we could say that if there's something present at the time that we didn't know about, so maybe at least we can open discussion, does it invalidate it? But you know, we could say that there are a lot of things we can say about that. I didn't know, I'm sure the thing my wife didn't know, I don't know, match my socks or whatever. You know, there are always things we don't know about before we get married, but you know, we're not gonna say that everything that we find out would be a cause for invalidating the marriage. So can we say that a marriage can ever be invalidated? So one way that a marriage can be deemed to have never taken place is if you marry on condition. You say, I'm marrying you on condition of such and such. I mean, generally we don't do that. But if you were to say, for example, the
can you marry off tonight? You want?
Yeah, it can work. We're gonna try it. I don't know if you want to try it at home, but
they did it. There are certain conditions.
Oh yeah.
Okay.
So if you say that, right, if you get married, on condition, I'm Menashe Ein Bo Mumin, and on condition that she doesn't have any blemishes, Einu Mekudesh. So the earlier sources really talk about the invalidating a marriage from with something that existed on the part of the woman. I mean, can we say that she is not married to him because of something that existed? Later authorities, the more recent, discuss the other direction. But we'll see if it works in one direction, if it could work in the other direction. So
why is it only discussed in later authorities?
Because it was probably more practical that there was a case where the couple had ended the relationship and the wife was demanding or wanted a divorce. And really the cases in the, you know, in the Gemara and the early post-Gemara are really just more talking about the sort of the mechanism of marriage, meaning really a Jewish marriage is a man marrying a woman, meaning a man can technically have on a Torah level can have more than wives. Again, I don't want to try it at home for a bunch of reasons, but probably became more of a relevant question of, you know, that, you know, women didn't want to remain married to someone, probably became more prevalent more recently. So the case would be if you get married on condition that she doesn't have any blemishes and she has, you know, a big wart or something. So Einu Mekudeshes, she's not married because you made a condition. And the condition was violated. It had to have existed at the time. So then the marriage never took place. But Knasa Stam, if you just get married, without any stipulations. But then you find that she has a bunch of warts all over. Tete shelo biksuva. So you can divorce her without giving her ksuva. Why? Why don't we say either you're married in full or you're not? Why can you divorce her and not give ksuba? So the reason is he didn't state any conditions. So now we have to consider, well, what does a normal person expect when you're going into a marriage? And let's say you don't know that someone has warts all over, or could be another type of disease or something that will impact the relationship. But you didn't specifically say that. So what do we assume a person is willing to accept? We get married, we don't know everything about everyone. We don't know everything that exists at the time. Hopefully there aren't major secrets, but we always find out more things about people. So what do we assume that a person will reasonably be willing to enter the marriage, even if a particular condition exists? So like here we say, the way the commentaries understand it is maybe there's a doubt. There's a doubt as to whether the marriage took place. He didn't make the specific condition that she can't have any blemishes, but if she has a blemish that she didn't disclose, that's very horrifying. So we assume that there is a certain type of deception, or we don't assume that he necessarily would have been okay with it had he known. So therefore, we still require a get, but he doesn't have the obligations of support that would be if it was more clear that he accepted the marriage with full knowledge of the condition. And some discuss whether this is he needs a she needs to get to remarried for out of rabbinic law, Torah law, but also says that she needs a get misafe because of a doubt. That's in the case where he doesn't say specifically, I don't want, I'm marrying you on condition that you don't have any blemishes. But if she has something he gets married without stating the condition, but he finds something that people would be, people want to know about. So then at least there's a doubt as to whether they're married because he didn't state the condition, and therefore she requires a divorce. So there's another Mishnah that suggests otherwise. It suggests that if a condition is found after the marriage took place, so maybe it was if they were never married. And it's a Mishnah in Yevamos, which talks about Yibum, levirate marriage, that if a couple is married and they don't have any children, so the husband dies, so then the wife will marry the closest, the brother. Now we do chalitza, we don't actually have them to marry, but the first mission Yevamos is like one of the most it's very hard to keep track of everything that goes on there because it talks about all these relatives. But basically the case is that in a situation of Yibum, if if the surviving wife would be forbidden for other reasons from the brother to marry, or one of the brothers to marry, so then he doesn't marry any of them. Basically, so it says, without getting into all those details, but the case is that if a woman is an islandess is some sort of condition where a woman never menstruates and never develops, and obviously would be unable to bear children, but it would be it's considered something that is would need to be disclosed. That we can't assume if this condition exists, that a person would be okay with it without having it disclosed before. So it sounds like here that if the woman is, if one of the, woman was an islandess, so then if one of the wives, talking about a person who has like five wives, then she wouldn't basically wouldn't be considered that she was married to a close relative. Basically, what it comes out is that she it suggests in this case that that the marriage was never effective. If he got married and then they realized that she had this, they had this condition where she would never mature, that the marriage was never effective. So Tosus points out there seems to be a discrepancy. You have in the first case, number one, that if you marry them and you find something that's very objectionable, but you don't make a specific condition, then you need a divorce out of doubt. As opposed to this mission Yevamos that suggests that no, if you find this, I'll call it a flaw, just because, but if you find this condition, and it's so, it would be so objectionable for someone to have not known about it, that we assume that the marriage didn't take place. So which one is it? How do we relate to a flaw that were a flaw or a blemish that was discovered later? So Tosva says it depends. If she is certainly in islandness, if she certainly has this condition and there's no cure for it, so then she's then it would be considered that the marriage never took place. Tosva says that, not all say that. As opposed to if there's a doubt, if it's something that may be curable, then we would say that she at least needs a divorce out of doubt. So basically, Tosfos has a, with regard to saying that a marriage is ineffective, he has a more lenient approach that if it was if this condition existed, that someone wouldn't be mochel, that someone wouldn't say, you know, it's okay, don't, you know, I'm okay with it. We assume most people would not say that they're okay with it. Then we assume that it was a kiddushei tos, it was an invalid marriage. But others don't say that it's so clear from these sources that even someone with such a severe condition would be considered not married, that they would at least need a get on a rabbinic level or out of doubt. So how do we apply the halacha? Basically, you have Tosfos who says that if there's a condition that's definite, that a person, we assume a person wouldn't forgive or be okay with, so then they wouldn't be married. Others say that there's at least a requirement in this case to give a get. So how do we decide? So the Aruch HaShulchan in number 7, more recently, about 120 years ago. So it says that maybe you could say that if she has a severe condition, then they're not married. But there's a very, very important condition to that. It is an islandess gotcha, an islandess who is married. So have a kiddushin avshe in a room lebanim. It still is a kiddushin. It still is effective marriage, even though she has this condition where she's not able to have children. And the lomi baisha yada shehi islandess, and the betrothal is effective, and it's not necessarily that she know that she's an islandess. Elafil lo yada v'hava mechel mechel toes. Even if he doesn't know, he had no idea about this condition, and it was a sale that was made in error. Mikomokom have a kiddushin v'tzrich get. Nevertheless, it's still a valid kiddushin. It's still a valid marriage, and she requires a get. So you see that even in a case where there's a blemish that we assume, you know, we never know about everyone, but we assume most people would not be okay with. If it wasn't disclosed. Even though it's a mekatos, it's a sale that if it were an exchange of objects would be considered invalid. Nevertheless, in this case, you would still need a divorce. And this is, and the Shulchan Aruch also says this, that we find blemishes or other things that in generally people wouldn't want. So she would still be married out of doubt. And Some explain that it may not be absolute. There may still be cases where the condition was so objectionable that it made the whole marriage under false pretenses. And the Chalkos Machlokes in number 9 says that when can we say that maybe she's not married? So we could definitely be suffik. Near Jamari Miyad Kisharoa Hamum, we're dealing with that when he sees the blemish, he's particular about it and he doesn't desire her. Avalim Shosek, Kishanodalo Hamum. But if he's silent when he's informed about it, he says, you know what, I think I can deal with it. It's not so bad. And he doesn't make a condition, even though later on he just screams out, he can't take it anymore. He realizes that, you know, what was I thinking? I can't live with this. But if that's the case, then it's certainly a valid marriage. Which, just to bring it a little into the more contemporary cases, if there's something that existed that, you know, let's say one of the parties knew about, let's say the woman knew about, but, you know, she thought that she could live with it or could change or she would give it time or something like that. So that would seem to be a problem as far as saying that the marriage didn't occur. I mean, you see from here, it really has to be something that existed at the time. And as soon as you knew about it, you ran away. If at the time you didn't run away, and this is talking about the man, meaning this case is something with the woman. But if he knew about it and he thought he could deal with it, and then he realizes what it was I thinking, then the marriage for sure is valid. This is not Al Tanai. If it's Al Tanai, so then
even if he ignores it, Al Tanai.
If he ignores the tonight, if they stay together, then we assume that he's okay with it. That's Al Tanai would be, I'm marrying you on condition that, right. So then we assume that it, kind of like we were talking about last week, that if they were together, so then they consummated the marriage and that would be an agreement to stay married. This is he's referring without the Tanai.
Okay.
Because without the Tanai, going back to where we started, without the Tanai, so we have to ask, well, what will an average person, without saying anything, can we assume that there's anything that he would say that he would not be willing to remain married? And as we see, it's very, very hard to say that. He says, in this case, it's a matter of doubt. If right away, when he finds out, he says that he's not okay with it. But certainly, if he doesn't say anything, so then it's not even misafek. That's not even out of doubt. It's a vada that they're certainly married. And this is what the Aruch HaShulchan says in number 10, and also very, very relevant to more contemporary questions. It says, if he remained after her, after they consummated their marriage, as they lived as husband and wife, and then they're certainly married. And this is Bein Medadar, Bein Bemuvin, Bein Bishari Tanayim, and also with other types of conditions. If they remained married, then the Kedushin and the marriage is certainly effective. And why is it effective? Because it says Shaima Bibnesha Az Huvar de Eno Makbid. Because from the fact that he remains with her indicates that he wasn't so particular about it. Maybe it was something he didn't like, but it clearly wasn't something that would cause him to would never want to be married. So So really, if you found out about it and remained married, so then even if a short time later you say you don't like it, so when it would not invalidate that initial marriage. So basically where we are now, and now we'll get to the reverse, but where we are now is you have Tosfos who says that if it's a blemish that no one will be mochel, that no one would forgive, then they don't need to get. And that, of course, would also be that if they didn't know about it, it existed at the time, and it wasn't a case where they heard about it and thought that they could then continue, and then, of course, and they came to their senses that they couldn't. Others say that, no, it's still, sounds like most say it's still a matter of doubt. Even if it was something that as soon as it was revealed, in this case, the husband wanted to just run away from, it would still be a matter of doubt. So if you apply that in the other direction, so it would depend who we rule like. But it seems to be certainly if it was so if it didn't exist at the time, or the one party thought that they could stay with the other, then the marriage would be effective. But here's where I get into trouble, but here's where we have to, be careful. Can we say that here we're talking about things that a man may be particular about with regards to a woman, right? This is all from the man's perspective. If you marry a woman without a condition and she has a blemish or she has vows, she's not going to shower and, things like that. Those are the types of vows that you're talking about, those that a husband would be able to object to, or whatever it is, dressed in black all day. So within this discussion, we're trying to figure out, is there anything that we could say that if someone a blemish that's so bad that your average person we could say with certainty would not have entered the marriage had they known that? So now we're talking from man to woman. We're talking about the blemishes of the woman. But what about the other way? Can we just flip it over? Can we say whatever principles we have that they would apply in the other direction? Or I'll say this, are women or men more particular about these blemishes? Mm-hmm. Women would be more particular.
I don't know.
About like a wart or a third foot or something.
I would be.
More than men.
I would just jump over this topic and say, right.
But the woman has to accept the kedushin, so it means they both know what they're getting into. Meaning, if a woman has to. She doesn't have to say anything, but she still has to accept the condition.
Just to be there.
Right. But nowadays, what is how
yeah.
accepted?
She.
How does she formally accept it?
She allows you to put it. Right. The post would say she doesn't have to say, like, Kibalti. It's discussed whether she met the Bajil, she doesn't have to say it. But if she says no, then no means no.
That's.
So a woman does have to. I mean, that's very clear from the market. He does the kedushin, but she has to accept it.
No,
it's not even like a feminine. The Gemara specifically says that.
We're not Muslim here.
So she has to accept. So basically, it is an agreement. So it is an agreement. Meaning, if you accept it's not a sale, but in a transaction, both parties have to know what they're getting into. So mm-hmm. So on the surface, it would seem that if it goes in the other direction, you could say, well, if I'm a woman, I could say I accepted the kedushin, not knowing that right, you had a third foot, or you had a big wart, or you had a in real life the big personality issues. So do we say the same? So there's a principle found in several places in Shas that suggests that maybe women are less particular about these types of things. So, I skipped over number 11. Number 11,
it's the crucial one.
Yeah, yeah. And this gets into the Gemara. So it says a saris. A saris is kind of the considered the equivalent of an island. A silas, a man who's castrated. I feel a low yada that who saris vadai, even if she didn't know, and he was certainly, you know, castrated. L'chuli al mitzricha get. According to all, she needs a get. The itza b'koldahu nichale. Because we have the Gemara says, we'll see it in number 12, that a woman is amenable with either with any method of kedushin or with basically with any type of person or with most types of people. So it says that even if a woman finds out that her husband is castrated, so you say that she definitely needs a get. So what does this mean that there's the itza b'koldahu nichale, that a woman is content with anyone. So in one place, it brings an example that if, let's say, a couple is married and the husband dies, they don't have any children, and her brother has these terrible boils. So now she's going to do yibum with him. So what do we say that maybe the original marriage was a kedushei tos, was a marriage in error, because had she known that this brother had these boils, then she would never have agreed to marry him, because on the possibility that maybe he would die, she'd have to do yibum with him. So the answer the Gemara gives, and there are explanations that go into more analysis of it, but the basic answer is that Anan Sadi, the Menach Nichale Becholdehu, that we have an assumption that it's satisfactory for her to have, you know, any type of marital arrangement. Kiresh Lakish, as Resh Lakish says, the Amar Resh Lakish, Tavla Mesav Tandul, Mil Mesav Armel, that there is a statement, it's quoted as a statement that women would say it's better to sit as two than to sit lonely like a widow. And this is mentioned several places in Shas. A prince or tavla meitzav l'tando, milameisav armelu. That they're better to be paired, better to be two than to sit alone. And the assumption is that this sentiment is more common among women than it is of men. That
I did not marry Usher. Considering that he might like fall off the bridge and then I'll have to go.
Right, so this is one context that is.
I think the fact that, like, it sounds like a woman is so desperate that she would be with a man.
Yeah, we're not.
Right. So this is it's brought in different contexts, but this is right. This is only one context with the brother. But Chazal do. Yeah, yeah. No, right.
We're a bit more discerning.
Right. So that's going to be a question. One, how do we understand the statement? And two,
Yibum is only if she has kids, right?
Yibum is if they don't have kids.
They don't have kids.
Right. So in this case, you could also say it's not so likely, but it does quote this principle. So it's saying like this. What it's basically saying is you have a marriage already there. A marriage that is done according to halacha. You know, everything looks good. But what this is saying that it's more difficult. The assumption is that it's more difficult to say that without knowing anything otherwise, without it having been stated, I don't like such and such flaw. But in the absence of that knowledge, we're saying it's more difficult to say that, of course, if a woman knew this, knew such and such, that she would never have agreed, then maybe it is for, if a man knew such and such, he would never have agreed.
The woman is more forgiving about flaws than men?
No, what you're saying
I think is what it's saying, or has more of a
little bit more positive.
But I think you're right. But to read it directly, maybe more of a need for companionship.
Okay, I don't get that.
Well, this is not therapy. This is sheer. Why
you can
take that show as a perfect example. Look how many single men we have versus how many single women we have.
I'll tell you, when I was preparing this, I could have done it without this point, but I think we're looking at the issue. We have to look at all the components of this discussion. And this is a principle that, again, you see, just to, again, put it in perspective, we basically haven't seen a case where, now go back to if it's the wife who has the issue, where we say so clearly that, oh, we assume that he never would have accepted us and the marriage is null and void, right? We really don't say that. It's very hard to say that there. But to add in this, there's a suggestion that it is harder to say that in the other direction. We're having a frank discussion. Do you think, 100 years ago, 1,000 years ago, 1,500 years ago, this may have been more true than today, less true than today?
Yeah, more true.
Okay. It was more true in other times. And do you think maybe less true now? So there was that suggestion. So there's Rabbi Emanuel Rachman. And this was in the 70s was a very contentious issue, but he promoted that perhaps we could say that if there are both certain flaws that exist, we can assume that a woman would never have agreed to enter the marriage knowing that flaw. So he was really the proponent of this mechanism of kiddushei tovs, really, that there was a marriage that was entered to in error. And he says that a Beis Din can recognize other intolerable defects in the husband as grounds for a declaration of kiddushei tovs. And he says these include physical and psychological abuse, adultery, molestation, abandonment, criminal activity, substance abuse, sadism. And he says that if those conditions are present, so we can say that the marriage was invalid because a woman would have never agreed to marry someone like this. And he says, what standard do we use? We say kiddushei tovs is when a condition exists that Beis Din would be able to compel the husband or put pressure on the husband to give a get. You know, if he's abandoning her or other issues like that. But he adds that, okay, well, what about Tav L'Meisav Tando? It's better of two than one. So he says it's not applicable nowadays. And once it's suspended, a woman can credibly testify that had she known of salient defects in her husband, she would have chosen not to marry. The marriage was a mistake, and she would be better off alone. That's what Rabbi Rachman proposed. And Rabbi Blythe, who just actually reading this article, he like translates Hebrew words into Latin. I think he's thinking that now, you know, we'll understand how he got the Latin. But so he wrote about this, and he takes objections. He objects to it, as did basically all major halakhic authorities from right to left. Basically did not accept this premise that you could say it's Kedushay Tos. And he said, there are some outliers, but really from all groups, all spectrum, this proposed solution, this was basically the premise for the solution, was not accepted. What are some reasons why this argument was not accepted? So like Blythe summarizes very nicely. He says that, one, in order to serve as grounds for annulment, the defect must have existed prior to the marriage. That's number one. It had to have existed prior to the marriage. And I mean, we were discussing that, can we say that a, you know, potential, an abusive, if there's such thing, an abusive personality, a certain disposition is a, can predict future behavior. And I think what the,
that, this is something like adultery can, for sure.
Right. So that's what Rabbi Blythe is saying. He said there are certain things that maybe aren't predictors and certain things that just didn't exist at the time. Now, I think there are some who have said in the Rabbi Rachman camp that, you know, for a lot of these things, maybe they have, you know, predispositions to certain things. But also an article by Rabbi Jachter, he says, you know, in the davar sof, there's no end to it. I mean, you have to really say what exists at the time. And so it had to have existed prior to the marriage. And number two, the defect must be one that, had it developed subsequent to marriage, would warrant coercion in order to compel the granting of a get. And he says in that list, some would and some wouldn't. What he put in that? What? Oh, he's an absolute disagreement.
He said some would and some wouldn't.
Notice, some of the defects in the husband would warrant coercion of a get. You know, being Rabbi Blythe disagrees with the one, it had to exist at a time, and number two, right, it would have to be grounds for pressuring to give a get. So, you know, some of these substance abuse, I don't know if he didn't say which one it was, but I don't know if substance abuse would be a grounds to for a base in and of itself to coerce a get. Adultery, as we pointed out, couldn't really have existed at the time. And other things, if the person, it's a terrible thing, let's say it's an abuser, you know, all these things presumably didn't, if they didn't exist at the time, then you can't say that the original Kedushin was in error. And what those who have tried to rely on Rabbi Rachman's premise is that, well, some of these things, let's say someone does have a certain personality. Well, do we say that means, had she known that he had this propensity for anger, would that have been a, would she not have gotten married? Even if someone has that nature, does that mean that they're going to lash out angrily? A lot of these things we don't know. It's tricky to say that there was something that existed at the time that she didn't know about, and it, had she known, she would immediately have rejected the marriage.
What about something that is black and white, like not
anger,
but like
kind of? So I'll go ahead, and then we can get you kind of save me from the tabla metav thing. I don't know if to discuss it, but I'll mention that now. So if you look at the last page, Moshe Feinstein does allow for kedushay taos. For saying that there was a marriage made in error in certain extreme cases. I think it's just four tshuvos dealing with it. He was really the employed this this concept more than anyone else. So the more you get basically from any broadly accepted, you know, posek from any camp is really in a handful of very, very extreme cases. What were the cases where he allowed it? So in number 19, so this is if a man was impotent in a way that was not curable. So he says, can we compare this to the case of the islandess, of the woman who is not developed? And he says that one Tosfos says that in that case, that she wouldn't need a get because it would be something that no one would overlook. And he says in some cases we require a get out of suffix, out of doubt. But he says, even according to those cases where we would require a get out of doubt, this was the opinion of Rabbeinu Tam, quoted in number 5. Even in those cases where we say out of doubt, that maybe assume maybe they're not married, but we don't want to have any issues of adultery or mamzera, so we require a get. But he says that would only be we'd only require a get on a rabbinic level for a woman who had a flaw. Aval, this is b'mumin shebaish. But blemishes that a man has, the Elish HaMapidos Vade, that we know that they're certainly particular about. The In Yachol, Livol, She'en B'yodaliz Garish, of Sedes Tuva. That what's the reason why in some cases we require a get out of doubt for a woman who has blemishes? Because we're not sure if the husband is so particular that he would never agree to the marriage. Ramosha says, well, in some cases we would assume that a woman would be less forgiving of these things, because she knows that she can't initiate the divorce. This is a bit of a novel insight. So he says that even in cases where maybe we'd say that if a man wants to end the marriage with a woman who has blemishes, would have to give a get out of doubt, maybe there's less of a doubt when it comes to a woman and these severe blemishes, because a woman wouldn't enter a marriage that she wasn't okay with, because she knows that she can't independently initiate the divorce. So that was case number one where Moshe allowed, in a case where he was unable to have relations. Another case was that he was an active homosexual. Not that he just had an orientation, he says, and not that he had engaged in homosexual behavior, but that he was actively having homosexual relationships or relations, and this was already existing at the time of the marriage. And he says in that case you could also say that he says vade kiddushei tos, because it was clear that a woman wouldn't want to be married to a person who's engaging in that behavior. But he says another case that I didn't put on here is that the person was actually a practicing Christian, something that, and he says that's only if the woman is religious. And he said, if she's maybe not from, maybe that wouldn't be something that would be, totally that you're unagreeable to the marriage. So we can say definitely. But if she's a religious woman and her husband's a practicing Christian at the time that they get married, so he says that would also be Kiddushei Tos.
But he was Jew.
Yeah. Right, but meanwhile he was going to church on Sunday, or he was, so it was a case like that, like he's going to Shabbos, he's in shul, Sunday he's in church, that's really where, but I don't know, that apparently was a real case. So he's saying in that case a religious woman we can assume does not want to be married to someone practicing as a Christian. So those were, but again, you see that they're very, very rare, and in each of these cases he says if it's at all possible to obtain a get, it should be done. It is just that if it's impossible to obtain a get, so something that we could say that a woman wouldn't have agreed to, but existed at the time and she didn't know about. And that's key. If let's say she found out about this behavior, but he says, okay, you'll try to be Makarvim, why don't you go to church? Let's go to, Shacharis on Sunday morning. Something like that. So then, or whatever, even in the other conditions, if she, wasn't so happy about it, but thought maybe I can live with this, then it's not going to make the marriage invalid. But only if it existed at the time, and it's really something that, because these are also things that are like tangible things, to say that someone, has a certain disposition. So, okay, people can, be kovish as yitzro. You don't know necessarily how they're going to.
You can prove that they existed before they're married, and you don't need to get.
Right. There were very few cases that the Moshe Feinstein said. If there was a condition that existed at the time, really behavior that existed at the time, a condition's hard to say. You have a condition. Let's say someone has a mental illness. Does that mean that they're not going to be a good, have a mental illness and be a, you know, a great husband? You know, have it under control, but take, you know, taking medications. You know, there are other things as well that it's hard to say that, you know, that something existed then that hadn't developed that will develop. We don't know what will develop. But in very, very rare cases where a get couldn't be obtained, and there was really specific behavior to point to or specific condition that was tangibly you know, present at the time. So they said if a get can't be obtained, she didn't know about it, then she could get remarried without a get.
Is this a time-sensitive thing? Like, let's say after a week of marriage,
so the Aruch HaShulchan said that if they live together, like Zman Hardin, if they live together for a while, I don't know how long it is, but basically if they were living together as, you know, as a couple, after the blemish was discovered, if they continued to live together. So it wouldn't have to be very long.
Like after a week or something, so then they still would need to get.
Yeah. Yeah. Or even, right. Or even before, let's say someone knew that, you know, something wasn't right about, I mean, you hear that unfortunately all the time. Something wasn't right, or other people had feelings about them, or feelings that, and this all doesn't take away from the fact that if based in rules that someone has to give a get, so that the community should, you know, under, if it's been halakhically determined that they need to give a get, so, you know, the community shouldn't tolerate, you know, refusal to do so if it's done in order to, you know, gain leverage. But, you know, but this is really just, can we say that a marriage never took place? So there has to be very clear evidence that something existed at the time that wasn't known about, that a person would never have agreed to marriage. Now, just the I have 3 minutes, but I don't want to you know, just let myself off safe without addressing the tavla meta, the better to be two than one. So how do we view that? So Rabbi Rachman said that it's a matter of, you know, social conventions, that back in the day it was true, now it's not true. Rav Soloveitchik, in a very passionate, one of the more famous addresses to the Rabbinical Council of America, said that when we say, you know, tav lemeitav tandov lemeitav armelu, that better that be, you know, two than one, he says that doesn't have any bearing, this number 17, with the social and political status of women in antiquity. The chazak is not based on sociological factors. He says that in the fabric of creation, that he says from Bereishis, says, and your desire shall be for your husband. He says a metaphysical curse rooted in the feminine personality. She suffers incomparably more than the male while in solitude. But he says that solitude to a male is not as horrifying an experience as solitude to a woman. And he says, and this will never change. It's not a psychological fact, it's an existential fact. It's not due to the inferior status of a woman, but it's due to the basic distinction between the female personality and the male personality. But actually, Rabbi Blythe, I think, softens this a little bit by saying that when we say tav lemeitav, the better to you know, be two than be one. So it doesn't mean that we assume that all or most women would be okay with it. But we assume it would be something that some women would be okay with. Then we can't say that with certainty that any marriage under this condition would be absolutely invalid. And he says that, right, like, the fact is demonstrably true. Even today, Rabbi Black says that there's not really a difference. You know, women didn't like boils back then. They probably don't like boils now. But he's saying, why do some women consent to marry someone with boils and the like? He says it's true of some women, is empirically demonstrable without need for reliance upon dogmatic faith. So then this is that point is, you know, is a sensitive point that I think it needs more discussion. But I brought it because it was part of one of the main parts of the arguments for Kiddushei Tos, that Rabbi Rachman said we can't say that this exists, that we can be certain that the that the marriage never would have been accepted from the beginning. But just to say again, we're looking at some of the technical details, but it's not to diminish the the real struggles and real pain that that is involved with these issues. And you know, Hashem gave us the Torah. The Torah is perfect, but I think one of the worst things that someone can do with the Torah is abuse the Torah and use the Torah as a weapon. And you know, unfortunately, that's what some people do. And then it's unfortunate that we have as a community, you know, have to support people who are who are halakhically entitled to a divorce. Hopefully, before that, help people with shalom bias. But just to hopefully this gave some insight as to why this is a challenge, where we can't just say, or by the rabbis can't just say that why can't just rule that that the initial marriage is invalid, and that would solve the Guna crisis. That it's just not so simple in either direction to say that. There are a lot of challenges, and again, that's why Rabbi Rachman's proposal was broadly not accepted in the Orthodox world. But especially because I think by and large, we're not able to accept that proposal. So we have to do everything we can to support people in their marriages and support people who are going through these things and encouraging everyone to act as the Torah requires us to act.